You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere. What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 3 o'clock hour, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, because sometimes too much is just too much. I am so excited to have my next guest joining us all, Dr. Gabriela Sandoval. She is the executive director of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. It is indeed a disorder. So happy to have you, Dr. Sandoval. Thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me, Maggie. I'm really excited to join you all today.
Yesterday, on an episode of his new Netflix series, Bill Gates talked with Senator Bernie Sanders about billionaires. And Bill Gates said something that I hope everybody gets to hear about. He said that if he were designing the U.S. tax code, billionaires would have 70% less money than they have right now. I mean, he stopped short of saying it should not be legal for people to amass basically the wealth that in prior decades was reserved basically for countries, that it should be illegal for people to amass wealth that exceeds the GDP of many countries. And today we're continuing this discussion. Dr. Sandoval, can you first tell us, what is excessive wealth? And why did you all build an institution to study it and address it?
Absolutely. So at the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute, we define excessive wealth as existing when a person is able to exploit people, the planet, and political power to their benefit. So that's when wealth becomes excessive. So I'm not talking about the millionaire next door. I'm not talking about the, you know, self-made small business person that, you know, in our community. I'm talking about people who have about $50 million in wealth or more. And that's really about 300, maybe 350,000 people in this country. So they're exerting a type of pressure on every aspect of our lives, Maggie, not just our democracy. We love to talk about the disproportionate influence that the wealthy have on our democracy and our government. But the fact is, these folks impact every aspect of our lives. So we founded this organization to really begin to get at how do we address the corrosive impacts of excessive wealth, not just on our government, but in our lives. And the fact is that folks are really in the dark about how rich the really, really, really rich are, right? We can't really wrap our heads around what a billion actually is. Like, I don't actually think most people think $1 billion is 1,000 millions. And really, the amount of time it would even take to spend that money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's next to impossible to spend that kind of money. There are only so many houses and cars and trips and rockets to outer space that one can build and consume. And so the billionaire with that wealth basically is incentivized to use the wealth to influence government.
Yes.
And frankly, at that level of wealth, someone asked me the other day, do you think billionaires are good or bad? And I said, from a sort of morality standpoint, and I said, listen, at that level of wealth, the concept of to those individuals of what is right and wrong has become sort of amorphous. What's right to them is increasing wealth and increasing influence, regardless of the impacts that it has on all of us. It's the very nature of wealth at that scale. You and the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute describe this cycle of excessive wealth. What is it? How does that work?
Yeah, so what we like to talk about is that it really begins with wealth extraction. And these are all the different ways that the system extracts wealth from communities with negative wealth. So people who are already in debt, right? Which are about 10% of the folks in our country are in pretty significant debt. So a lack of wealth, negative wealth, and then people with low wealth, which are really most of us. I mean, the vast majority of us don't have $1 million in wealth saved, you know, to provide opportunity for our families or to provide for us in case of a rainy day, right? And so so we really want to make sure that we're working to clarify that that is the situation that we're in.
Yeah, and the extraction of wealth, we've talked about stock buybacks. We've talked about stepped up basis. We've talked about all of these tricks of the trade. These tricks, folks, if you've got a couple of million bucks in your 401k, we're not talking about you.
Exactly.
Right? This is not middle class people trying to make it a little bit better for their kids. We're talking about people who can effectively, because apparently money is speech and corporations are people, buy elections as an individual.
Yes. And let me just say that most folks don't even know what the stepped up basis or stock buybacks are, right? So when I'm talking about wealth extraction, I'm talking about like increasing rents on everything, right? Increasing costs of food, increasing cost of debt itself, right? Like it's so expensive. And we live in really a kind of two-tiered system where the wealthy have access to certain types of loans and the rest of us have access to really to this having wealth extracted from our pockets. And also, you know, there are, so debt is one way, wages, a lack of getting paid, like most folks don't get paid a fair living wage. So first we're looking at the way wealth is extracted, and then we're looking at the way that wealth is then hoarded. It's warehoused, it's defended. There's a whole industry, a whole armies of people who literally make their living by helping wealthy people hoard that wealth and make sure it doesn't get taxed, which is part of the reason that we see really wealthy people being taxed at a much lower rate than everyone else.
Yeah, because they can afford to buy the people to advocate for them to help shield their money from taxation. You were going to say another element of what you look at.
And then that third part of the excessive wealth cycle is that then once that wealth is amassed to a certain degree, we get to what you were talking about earlier, which is then that wealth takes our government captive. And we've got, you know, researchers who've shown that the impact of the excessively wealthy on our government, they have 67,000 times the impact on our government than we do. That's how much more influence they have than you and I. And so this is part of the reason why we see policies that are really popular among voters. A lot of times, you know, the vast majority of voters might be in favor of something, but if the excessively wealthy don't want it to happen, they have the resources and the influence to make sure that the will of the people is not heard.
It doesn't happen. It's that precise moment, right? The vast majority of Americans believe that reproductive freedom should be enshrined in our federal law. The vast majority of voters believe that childcare needs to be affordable, whether that is through subsidy or tax credits. The vast majority of people do not believe they are paid a fair wage. The vast majority of people are unable to save for a safe, secure, and dignified retirement. The vast majority of people who file bankruptcy do so because of medical debt. The vast majority of people struggling with student loans know that this isn't right. Consumer debt, right? Home ownership is a problem. And the obstacle to this is not whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. The obstacle to this are the obscenely wealthy, which is what I'm going to call the obscenely wealthy, who prevent all of us who know that we're getting screwed from applying the pressure through the voting process to bring about these changes. Fundamentally, that is anti-democratic, right? That there is a moment when the wealth becomes so extreme that it undermines democracy at its core.
And I'll just add one more thing to your list. The vast majority of people support a wealth tax.
Yes. It's why
there is no reason why we shouldn't be able to enact this.
Yes. It was interesting yesterday with our guest. We talked about how housing policy is tax policy, how even defending and securing our border is about tax policy, that we could do all of these things, whatever your number one issue is, we could address that and do so much more in service of the middle class, the backbone of our country's economy and the backbone of our country, full stop, if billionaires and corporations were paying their fair share. My special guest this half hour is Dr. Gabriela Sandoval. She's the executive director of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute, joining me for today's installment of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. She was the former director of race and equity policy for TURN, the Utility Reform Network. She holds a PhD in sociology from Cornell University, as well as a master's degree in city and regional planning. I'm so happy to have her here. When we come back, we're going to talk about what are we doing to cure this excessive wealth disorder? It's so very, very important. We're going to talk about what we need to convince our elected officials and those that are running to be in elected office, and what we've got coming this next year in the tax policy fight. I'm going to say of a generation, right? Like the tax policy fight of 2025 may very likely define our democracy going forward. Very briefly, because we've got about a minute before we got to take care of some of our own business, what are a couple of things that you're working on to try to cure this excessive wealth, this obscene wealth disorder?
Absolutely. Well, one of the most important things we need to do is make the structure that allows excessive wealth to exist visible to everyday people, because most people simply don't understand or, you know, are so busy trying to survive that they can't see how excessive wealth impacts them.
So making it visible, you can go to taxtherich.org. That's an incredible little snippet. We'll give you more information about how you can check out the work that the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute is doing when we return after these brief messages with my very special guest, Dr. Gabriela Sandoval, the executive director of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Back with more in just a moment. Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every day from 3 to 3:30, it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking about money, because so much of what happens in our political ecosphere is really about the money. And it's really about the very few people. I believe my guest this half hour, Dr. Gabriela Sandoval, said that there's about 370,000 individuals in this country that have wealth in excess of $50 million. These people have too much influence on all of our systems. If you feel like you've been getting screwed, it's very, very, very much about the tax code and the dodge that these excessively wealthy people engage in every tax year, and therefore the amount of influence that they wield over our policies and our politicians, frankly, regardless of party. Dr. Sandoval, the executive director of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute, helping us understand that. Just a couple of facts, and then I want to talk about what can people do, how can they get involved, what do we seek to change. Here are some statistics, folks. 10 million U.S. households have negative wealth. What do you think the chances are that those people, you know, have their congressman on their speed dial? Zero. Zero chance. What do you think the chances are that the 370,000 individuals in this country with over 50 million in wealth have some Congress people on their speed dial? I'll say it's about 100%. Here's another fact. Elon Musk's wealth, which is estimated to be $245 billion, is over 1 million times more than the median household wealth in the United States. He has a million more of whatever it is that you may or may not have. A million more times that. Timothy Mellon, this is a billionaire. He donated $165 million this political cycle. That should not be permitted, in my opinion. And the average CEO to worker pay ratio in the United States in 2022 was 344-1. This is the excessively wealthy. By the way, that same ratio in 1965 was 20. So Dr. Sandoval, again, thank you for being here and sharing your expertise with all of us. What should people do to get involved? What can we be doing to fix this problem?
Well, first of all, I think we need to educate ourselves. We need to really get a grasp on how this problem is impacting all of us. Because let's be real, Maggie, most people, if you talk to most people, they would say they would like to be billionaires.
Yeah.
Right? They would like to have tons and tons of wealth. And in fact, lots of people I talk to say, I'm going to be a billionaire one day. So there's a huge disconnect between what people think it takes to become a billionaire and what it actually takes to become a billionaire. So I think we have, you know, a lot of learning to do. And then I think, you know, one of the things, and I'll just do this real quickly with your listeners and with you. When you close your eyes and think about the things that keep you up at night, right? Like the things you worry about. I'm pretty sure those things are tied 9 out of 10 times. Those things are tied to the influence of the excessively wealthy in our society. And so let me just give you a few examples. Climate change. Climate change, the excessively wealthy have a massive carbon footprint. And not so long ago, a small roomful of excessively wealthy people made some decisions that affect every single one of us. And these are folks involved in the fossil fuel industry in particular. They made some decisions that benefited their bottom line, but that are actually actively killing the rest of us. I don't know about you, but I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I worry that she's not going to make it to 50 years. We're going to begin seeing crop failures due to the decisions of a few handfuls of excessively wealthy people. Okay, so there's one thing. Now, that's a big thing, right? But let me say another thing. Maybe you have some listeners out there who are worried about the health of their dear pet Fido, right? Their little dog at home. They've had this dog for a long time. He's a real good companion. Veterinary care is now almost wholly monopolized by the excessively wealthy. We cannot escape this. You go to a museum, the art in that museum, guess who decided what's on those walls? 9 out of 10 times, excessively wealthy people. You're going to school, or your children are going to school, and most of the time, the curriculum that you're taught, controlled by excessively wealthy people. I could go on and on and on. And, you know, down to like really kind of everyday issues like the price of food, the price of gas, the things, you know, our ability to feed our families healthy meals. It's all influenced. Whether or not you can breathe clean air, whether or not you can find shade in, you know, during a heat wave in your hometown or green space, it's all impacted by the structure that enables excessive wealth. And so first, I want to encourage everyone to think about this. And it's really hard because we're all taught that if you work hard, you get wealthy. And it's actually not really true. So we really need to like question some of the myths we've been taught about how people get wealthy. And then we need to really start talking to the folks in power. You know, I've talked to lots of our local elected officials and state elected officials. And, you know, to your point earlier about who we have on speed dial, when I talk to them, they'll tell me my constituents come up to me at the grocery store or at the airport and they talk to me about the cost of healthcare or the cost of food. But nobody talks about the tax policy that they could actually exert influence over.
Yeah.
So we need to be talking to our elected officials about, hey, this system is rigged and you need to do something that helps us all share in the prosperity that exists in this country.
Couldn't agree with you more. If people want to do something about this, they can talk to their elected officials. Where can they find out more information about your work, Dr. Sandoval?
They can reach out to us via our website at excessivewealth.org.
Because here's the reality. If you are excessively wealthy with $50 million or more in your bank account, you probably worked hard, but you probably also abused your workers, took advantage of natural resources, used up our infrastructure, and abused the political process to get there. It is a problem. Thank you so much, Dr. Sandoval. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me.
You don't own me, say the women of these United States, the old Republican lawmakers who have decided to tell us what we can and cannot do about our health care. I say, and so does my very special next guest, who is running in the 8th Congressional District. So excited to have her back on the show, Dr. Kristen Lierley. She joins Tom Paulswitz, my special co-host for this episode. Thanks so much for making time, Dr. Lierley. I'm so excited to have you. I'm calling it the year of the woman. Women are going to save America.
It is the year of the woman, especially when you look up at Northeast Wisconsin. We have more women running for the state seats in Northeast Wisconsin than men. People don't think that that is what Northeast Wisconsin is like, but I am telling you right now, this is a new Northeast Wisconsin.
Awesome.
I love it. Tom and I just finished up a discussion with Dr. Gabriela Sandoval about excessive wealth. And I find myself yet again looking at an election in the state of Wisconsin and yet again finding myself looking at a Republican candidate who has got stinking wealth, excessive wealth, running against a Democrat. And yet again, just like the race that Senator Baldwin is in, just like the race between Tony Evers and Tim Michaels, we've got another old rich dude who has never had any interest in public service all of a sudden saying, well, I have all the answers. What do you make of all of this, Kristen, especially given your opponent's background?
I can't even imagine what it's like to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth, to be literally handed a business, to retire in your mid-40s, to go on vacation for a year, and then to decide, I'm going to do public service. It's not like beach. You don't just do public service. You have a lifetime that is a commitment to public service. And you know, that's a huge contrast between me and my opponent. I'm a first-generation college student. My family's been in the district for six generations. They're dairy farmers. They worked in the paper industry, which is so foundational to that region. I have fought tooth and nail to have my kids, to become a physician, to become an internationally known physician, and now to be running for this congressional district. It is crazy to me how people can just walk in and decide they're going to buy something like this. When someone like me, someone like you, Tom, so many of us who are now stepping up are saying, we're going to turn our history, our legacy of public service into something even bigger and better because we know that's what the people of Wisconsin need.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask you, the Senate voted on an IVF protection measure, and despite all sorts of blunderbuss nonsense from certain GOP candidates that, of course, they want to protect IVF, that vote in the Senate failed. It failed on party lines with every single Republican voting against it, except for two, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, both who support reproductive freedom. Dr. Lyerly, draw the contrast between you and your opponent when it comes to reproductive freedom and especially IVF.
Well, could you hear my eyes roll when
I think I did, actually. I heard it.
Yes.
I know they have been all over the place. I mean, you hear Donald Trump in Wisconsin talking about he's going to mandate coverage for IVF. And then a week later, just like a few weeks before, the Republicans unequivocally vote down IVF. It is just unbelievable the lack of consistency in that party. And the thing that gets me the most as an OBGYN doctor who has dedicated my life to taking care of my patients and helping them grow their families, this is not flippant for them. This is a huge part of who they are and what they need. You have to be consistent about your messaging on this issue. And if you truly believe in families, in women, in babies, then you support IVF. And if you don't support IVF, like all the Republican senators, except for those two, then you don't support IVF.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just that simple. Folks, if you live in the 8th Congressional District, I suggest you ask Dr. Lyerly's opponent exactly if he would vote to protect IVF if elected to Congress, if he would vote to enshrine reproductive freedoms if he was elected to Congress, if he would vote for billionaires to pay their fair share, if he would vote for the richest corporations to pay their fair share. Would he support a child tax credit, right? Like, there are so many things that are so essential to Wisconsin families, and I struggle to think of one that actually lines up with what Wisconsin voters in this 8th CD would want, that actually are supported by your opponent and his party.
Well, and we don't really know much about specific stances on things like IVF, because whenever my opponent is asked about reproductive health, he like nervously says, give it to the states. And that's about as far as he gets. So we need to know these answers. So
yes.
You're right, Maggie. I really do encourage people to ask these specific questions. And, you know, fortunately, we're having a debate. So on September 29th, a week from tomorrow, we're going to be getting together at the Mothy Center at UWGB. It's going to be on WBAY. We're going to be streaming it. It's going to be everywhere. And this is going to be the opportunity for people in the 8th CD to know, where does Tony Weed stand on corporate handouts? Where does he stand on solving the housing crisis? Where does he stand on helping regular people put food on their table? He says that he understands that people struggle to put gas in their car, yet he was on a board that advocated to raise gas prices.
Yeah.
So his actions speak very loudly. We're not yet hearing a lot of his words.
Yeah, I was really excited to see the announcement of the debate. It remains, I think, in congressional races and in local races, debates actually have meaning, have something to say, especially when you've got a guy who's never done anything except cash the checks that his family set him up to cash for the entirety of his life, taking year-long vacations. What the heck do you know about the middle class? You were born into the elite class. When we talk about elites, we're talking about your opponent. I keep telling people, elites aren't Democrats or Republicans. Elites are the rich people. Those are the elites, the people that don't actually have to work for paychecks anymore. What are you hoping is asked clearly at the debate, Dr. Lyerly?
I want him to be able to explain his position on abortion, on reproductive health, on IVF. That is something where he truly cannot enunciate how he feels about it. I think that's really important. But also corporate handouts, that is a huge thing. And what are his actual plans for easing the economic woes of the people of Northeast Wisconsin. 60% of folks in this country are living paycheck to paycheck. Not my opponent, but most people. And one of the biggest problems that they have is paying for their healthcare, accessing healthcare. I want to know, where does he stand on healthcare? How are we going to fix this healthcare crisis that disproportionately affects people in rural areas? So much of our district is rural. So many people are suffering, older people, people who are vulnerable. They deserve better. They deserve better.
And yeah, they deserve, go ahead, Tom.
And I would say one thing that would be really important to try to draw out of him is, why is he running? Like, why now? Is this just a badge? It's time to buy a seat in Congress type situation? Or what thing does he feel truly passionate about that he's there to solve that's hard for anyone else to do? Because my guess is he will not have an answer for that.
Yeah, the answer that I've heard so far is that he took that year-long vacation and then he heard that Mike Gallagher was leaving and he said, oh, I've always wanted to do public service. I mean, really, that's the answer.
That's astounding. Yeah, kudos to you, though, for getting a debate, because it was very difficult in the fifth CD to get anybody to respond. And I think it's just part of democracy, right? There should be two people who are explaining their positions to your constituents and giving them a true choice so that people know where you stand. So I think it's awesome to see that it's actually happening.
Yeah, one other looking forward to it.
Yeah, one other area that I hope the moderators, and if you have a chance to put the screws to your opponent, Dr. Lyerly, ask him about preservation of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, because this is what the leader of his party has said about that. Let's take a listen, Aaron.
One last question.
Go ahead.
Entitlements ever be on your plate?
At some point they will be. We have tremendous growth. We're going to have tremendous growth this next year. It'll be toward the end of the year. The growth is going to be incredible. And at the right time, we will take a look at that. You know, that's actually the easiest of all things, if you look, because it's such
a big
percentage.
If you're willing to do
something. If you don't cut something in entitlements, you'll never really deal with
the debt. We'll be cutting, but we're also going to have growth like you've never had before.
You changed your outlook on how to handle entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President. It seems like something has to be done, or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting and...
Yes, cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. That's what the leader of the GOP has said. That's what Ron Johnson has said. I want to know what your opponent has to say about that, because what?
Mm-hmm. I can tell you what the people in the district are saying. They're saying, hey, I paid into Social Security my whole life because I need that to be there for me. So cutting benefits or extending the age to which you start receiving your benefits is not a satisfactory answer to these people who did everything they were told to do. But to Donald Trump, you know, you heard him say, well, there will be growth. Remind me again how many times he has been bankrupt. Based on his projections. Yes. You know, even when the tax cut that he gave in 2017, we knew that that created a budget deficit. But what was his answer? There will be growth to make up the deficit. No, that is not fiscally conservative. That's not even fiscally responsible. There was not growth. And now we have an even worse deficit for no reason.
Yeah, to get billionaires and millionaires like your opponent an enormous tax cut and try to, frankly, get one over on the rest of us by, oh, yes. American households, middle class households, got on average a $60 reduction in their tax bills,
right,
while people with a net worth of over $1 million due to the Trump tax cuts saw their average tax bill go down by $60,000. $60 versus $60,000, that was the shell game, the wool over all of our eyes. It is not a tax cut for the middle class. It is a giveaway to the rich and the richer. Tom, you ran for Congress twice. I wanted to give you the opportunity to have a moment with Dr. Lyerly. Any sage advice for the good doctor?
Well, we were actually talking a little bit before. Hire good people, which you've already done, and because it's essential. And then be yourself, because the voters understand if you're not being yourself. And get out there like you're already doing. And I'm thrilled that you're having a debate, because you know, putting it up and showing the passion that you have compared to the why he's running, you know, because that tax cut sounded like it did a good job or did it went a long way to allowing him to have a year long vacation. So probably was the funding for it. But, you know, I wish you all the luck, and you're not really going to need it because you're very articulate. But I think the biggest thing is to draw him out and put him on record for the things that people are going to go, that just doesn't make sense for the rest of us.
You're
it's
so right,
weird,
Tom.
Right? There's some weirdness happening.
Yes.
Folks, my very special guest this segment, thank you so much, Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District. And guess what, everybody? Since it is the year of the woman, I will be joined every Thursday at 3:30 by Dr. Lierley because these issues are so very important. Briefly, Dr. Lierley, where can people find out more about your campaign and your positions on the issues?
KristenForWisconsin.com is our website, and then Kristen for Wisconsin on all the socials. And let us know what you want to talk about, because this campaign is a movement and it's for the people. That's you.
Awesome.
I love it. Thanks so much, Dr. Lierley. We'll see you back here next Thursday at 3:30 every Thursday until the biggest election in the year of the woman. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tom Paulsiewicz and I, one of the most reasonable men in politics, talk about the Teamsters when we come back. What's going on there? I don't get it. Donald Trump is not a fan of the working man and woman, not a fan of organized laborers. We talk about it next with Tom Paulsiewicz here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Get your phones ready, everybody, because in the 4 o'clock hour, my little buddy and your friend Dom Salvia is going to be dropping the secret word of the hour in Civic Media's statewide text to win contest. So in the 4 o'clock hour, you got to go get that app. When Dom gives you the word in the 4 o'clock hour, you're going to text using the app. That's going to enter you to win either $100 or some gold jewelry, which we give away in the hour, and it's going to get you entered to win a pair of indoor club level tickets to see the old green and gold in Green Bay on Monday, December 23rd against New Orleans. Don't miss it. That contest happening every day of the week, weekdays, Monday through Friday this week in the 7 a.m., 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. hours. We're going to continue this contest through next week. Don't miss out, everybody. But we've still got some more time with my good friend and yours, Tom Paulsiewicz, one of the most reasonable men in politics. And I'm hoping, Tom, that your reasonableness can help me get my head around what the hell is going on with the Teamsters report saying that somewhere north of 60% of Teamsters are pro-Trump at this point. I can't make heads or tails. I actually can. Yesterday I said it's a result of people feeling screwed and not getting a fair shake at things, feeling like they're not getting ahead, which is not logically a vote for Donald Trump, who's just going to have more tax giveaways to his billionaire buddies. It's a vote for Kamala Harris to help fix all of this mess. What's your instinct on what's going on here, Tom?
You know, when I ran, I went in front of the unions and had conversations, and I could tell that there was this beginning of union members questioning whether Democrats were really helping them or not. And I had a hard time wrapping my head around it then, and I have a harder time now, because all else held equal, Republicans have said over and over again they want to kill unions because unions get in the way of more profits. And So, to me, and we were talking a little bit about this before, is it's a failure of leadership to help the actual union members understand what benefits they get by being part of the union. Because they're so scared about people not wanting to be part of the union that they're glossing these things over instead of hitting it head on. And it boggles my mind that you can have a – because it's Sean O'Brien, right, the leader of the Teamsters. It just boggles my mind that he hasn't taken the time to help educate his people to be able to say, look, here's what the Biden-Harris administration has actually done. They saved a whole bunch of different pensions through one of the bills they had passed. And that would not have happened under Republicans.
Hell no. There's no way Trump is shoring up union pensions.
Right.
Are you flipping kidding me? This guy has been stiffing contractors since the first time he gets a shot call about whether or not to pay the people he hired to do work on his glitzy hotels and casinos. I mean, that is the track record here. It's just failure of leadership. I think failure for people to take seriously their own interests.
Yes.
Like if you feel, if you're a union member or if you're just a regular middle-class folk and you're feeling, you know, persuaded by the Trump Vance lie machine, care enough about your own self-interest to diligence what they're saying. When they say a tax cut, who actually reaps the greatest benefit of that? Is it you? Or is the tax cut designed to just help billionaires and the richest corporations and eventually to defund Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and bankrupt the middle class?
Exactly. Or I've been persuaded enough to think that immigration is a far bigger issue than my pension. And then I'm gonna vote for someone who's going to, quote, you know, tackle this issue, which isn't really impacting me anyways, but I'm willing to put my pension at risk for that to happen.
It's a vote against self-interest at a very basic level. Tom, I also wanted to give you a crack to talk about Elon Musk. I feel like Elon's spinning out in a way that is not dissimilar to Donald Trump. He texted this, or not texted, X posted, "Find Taylor Swift, you win. I'll give you a child and guard your cats with my life." Creepy. He texted this, "And no one is even trying to assassinate Biden or Kamala." He texted a debunked allegation that there was some bomb found outside of a Trump rally in Long Island. New York officials and law enforcement saying that was false. It was knowably false at the time. There was absolutely nothing behind it. This guy is a threat to democracy.
Yes.
He controls what you see and read, and he's totally crazy. What is going on with this Trump-Musk love fest?
Well, first off, you and I, if you and I tweet what he tweets, the Secret Service would be knocking at our door.
Absolutely.
And second off, this is a direct offshoot of the Supreme Court decision about immunity granted to presidents, which then carries over to anybody in their sphere of influence.
Yep.
And it is, but this is the direction that we would be heading under a Trump presidency, where people like Elon Musk would have far more influence on what's happening and to the detriment of the rest of us.
Yeah, that's the, you know, it comes full circle. Our discussion with Dr. Sandoval, our discussion with Dr. Lyerly, and all, this is about a guy who's got access to a presidential candidate. They're both off their rockers. And if anybody thinks that Elon Musk or Donald Trump knows what it's like to buy a gallon of milk when it's more expensive, or to go in and look at what a pound of butter costs and go, oh my gosh, these are the guys that actually engage in the price gouging and the exploitation of workers that makes inflation happen.
Yes. And Elon Musk, his businesses are a direct result of government influence and money to help prop him up and keep him going. It's crazy to think that he doesn't understand that. And one of the reasons he's successful is because the rest of us loaned him money.
Yeah. It's just weird. They're all weird, folks. That's Tom Paulswitz. He's with me every Thursday as a special guest co-host. Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Maggie Dawn. This was the Thursday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Dom Salvia is up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.